allies, and anybody that wants to learn more about the LGBT plus community. My name is Zanardi, and I'm so glad all your beautiful faces are here. Today's guest is named Rob. He wants to be anonymous, so we will not disclose any further details on his name. This podcast is very interesting and will actually be broken down into two parts because it was so long. So the first part of the podcast, well, this podcast episode specifically, will deal with Rob's upbringing in a homophobic family and his survival of cancer and overcoming cancer and having to deal with all of these things at once. He was a childhood cancer survivor. He was almost outed in middle school. He had to deal with homophobic family, not just his parents, but his extended family as well. He immigrated to the United States when he was 10 years old. And so he kind of went through a lot as a child. So this podcast episode specifically will focus on his childhood and his overcoming cancer and being gay, and even meeting Lady Gaga, believe it or not. And then the next episode on Tuesday, we'll talk more about his adult life as a gay male, still not being out to his father, as well as his survival of sexual assault. So without further ado, here is Rob.
Rob, welcome to the show.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. How are you doing today?
I'm doing the best I can starting 2020.
Good.
You know, just had a birthday, old, all that fun.
Oh, how old did you turn?
25.
Nice. Yeah, that's not old. It's about a quarter way done.
I can start my quarter life crisis, so that's nice. You
know? Officially, not prematurely.
Yeah, or just have an ongoing crisis.
So. A constant crisis.
Yes, from 1995 up to right now.
Well, I guess talk to me a little bit about yourself. Tell me about just your generic, you know, childhood upbringing, what you do now, things like that.
Child upbringing. Oh gosh.
Born and raised.
Flashbacks. No, I was born and raised in the Philippines.
Okay.
I'm an only child. When I was growing up, my dad was here in the U.S. working and whatnot, and then my mom and I were in the Philippines with my grandma, my uncle. It's funny because, you know, with the whole sexuality thing, growing up, it was never explicitly stated to me about where the lines are drawn mm-hmm. in terms of sexuality. I always kind of thought it was just this fluid thing without even realizing what that meant, you know,
right.
or realizing what exactly this entailed and to some people how triggering it is.
Mm-hmm.
I think when I was about 5, I was particularly drawn to this cartoon character, Johnny Bravo.
Okay.
I think he was my.
He had muscles.
He had muscles, the slick back hair, the glasses. I think he was like my sexual. To the point where, I mean, my mom didn't realize why I liked him so much. She probably just thought he was like a role model to me. But
right.
she bought me this inflatable Johnny Bravo like pool thing,
oh, wow.
pool donut. I said the word inflatable and now everything's just wrong. Right, yeah. So, but growing up, I was very religious.
Okay.
Because I was raised religious, mm-hmm. obviously.
What sect of religion?
Well, my mom was a branch of Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
It's more common in the Philippines. In English, it's actually called the Church of Christ. But
okay.
I know that means a lot of different things here in the U.S. My dad's Catholic okay. through and through. So, actually, technically, their marriage wasn't even supposed to be a thing. It wasn't allowed because they had, you know, conflicting religions, and one had to kind of succumb to the other and mm-hmm. convert, but they never did.
Okay.
So growing up, I mean, even though my dad wasn't around as much because he was here in the U.S., every time he would travel back home and visit, they would always argue about religion and whose beliefs are, you know, right.
Yeah, yeah.
So I was always caught in the middle of that. But the one constant thing between both religions, between Catholicism and that branch of Christianity, was that homosexuality is a sin.
Mm-hmm.
And so growing up, I always thought that was it. That, okay, like, I have to listen to God. I have to listen to what these people are telling me. And otherwise, I'm going to hell.
Yeah, yeah.
So Luckily, though, my mom wasn't the type to condemn. She's not very, she goes to church. She believes in God. She mm-hmm. has her beliefs. She has her hopes and prays and you know, talks to God whenever she can or whenever she's experiencing hardships. But she's right. never one to condemn someone for being the way they are.
Okay.
So thankfully, she doesn't go by the book, so to speak.
Right.
My dad, on the other hand, was raised very Catholic. Mm-hmm. So it was very by the Bible, by the book. So it was just always ingrained in their minds. He grew up with, I think, at least 7 siblings. Most were men and then some women. So my uncles and aunts are all very homophobic.
Yeah.
You know? So just, I think that was like the main thing, just growing up, kind of seeing two different viewpoints on what this particular subject is meant to be or not to be, and me kind of realizing, do I fall into that category?
Right.
You know, am I part of this taboo subject that they're speaking of, mm-hmm. which is liking men, and I'm a man.
Right.
Well, at least a boy back then.
Right.
You know?
And then being afraid of, wait, oh no, I think I am that.
Mm-hmm.
I can't be that.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's wrong, because I was raised, told it was wrong, and dealing with those, that struggle with the emotion and trying to, you know, cope with it or acknowledge it.
Right.
So tell me a little bit more about your father. What was he like raising you, being, you know, fairly strict on his religion? Was it simply just like, hey, don't be gay, or was it a negative environment around?
Well, quite frankly, he wasn't around that much to raise me in a sense.
Okay.
Obviously, he provided for us when it came to finances.
Mm-hmm.
But when I finally moved to the U.S.
At what age?
At 10 in 2005. That's obviously when I spent more time with him. But growing up, I was always very close to him just because I never saw him as much.
Mm-hmm.
So there was always that longing of a father figure in my life.
Mm-hmm.
Daddy issues.
Mm-hmm.
So when I moved here, that dynamic changed within months.
Mm-hmm.
It went from me being super excited to finally get to know my dad better and be around him and be loved by him to, oh my God, what is this mess?
Mm-hmm.
Because, and obviously, he never knew about anything. He still doesn't to this day. Not that I'm trying to hide anything,
sure.
But I'm sure he knows.
Mm-hmm. So you're not out to him? Is that what?
No, not officially.
Okay.
I've never confirmed or denied.
Yeah.
But I'm at the point in my life where I don't feel the need to announce it
mm-hmm.
to anybody. You know, I don't owe it to anyone, but it's not like I'm hiding.
Sure.
My mom knows. but growing up, even though I never explicitly stated whether I'm this or that, he would always make offhand comments about homosexuals, about gay people, about lesbians, saying, oh, I wish I could collect them all on one planet and blow up that planet.
Oh, my God.
Uh-huh.
And you're a little boy having these feelings, hearing this. It's hearing my father basically wants to blow me up.
Yeah.
Wow.
And he would, anytime anything about gay people would come on TV, and it's me and my parents and I watching TV at night, he would always make some comments saying, oh, if my kid ever turned out gay, I would definitely disown him. I would not want that to have that in my life. God, that's disgusting. You know, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Typical homophobic things you hear. It's just a lot worse when you're hearing it from someone who's, supposed to love you and be there for you no matter what, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, the whole point of having a child is to love them unconditionally.
Yeah.
And here I am, sitting there, feeling like I can't be loved unconditionally. This is all happening while I'm still trying to figure out what I am,
mm-hmm.
who I am.
Yeah.
You know? So. Mm-hmm.
That's terrible. And
yeah.
And so you're, you know, prepubescent at this time, we're like 10, 12, 13, this is all happening.
About like 12.
Okay.
Yeah, like 10 to 12, around that time where it was really bad.
Okay.
I mean, it didn't end there, but, you know, life is a constant
right.
cycle.
And so what happens next as you start coming into your teens and growing and maturing in that way?
Well, the funny thing is, just backtracking a little bit, mm-hmm. when I first moved here, you know, at 10, I was supposed to be in fifth grade because I just finished fourth grade, but they put me in fourth grade because it was winter break. Okay. Anyway, I had a classmate, and I just thought he was like the cutest thing. His name was Austin. Super cute. God, so adorable. And since, you know, I didn't know what it meant to be gay, or I didn't know what those labels were, because mm-hmm. we never had that conversation.
Right.
I would always come home and tell my parents, just like, oh my God, there's this like really cute guy, Austin, in my class. And my mom would just laugh. Mm-hmm. And she'd be like, oh, like, what does he look like? Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And I would describe him. And then my dad would laugh, but like kind of just shake his head and dismiss it and mm-hmm. then walk away. So, I mean, it's, you know, it's kind of like I never hit it.
Right.
But I noticed growing up, those feelings kind of escalated, not for that particular person, but I noticed it more and more often, where I'll see somebody and I'll think, wow, they're really attractive. Mm-hmm. Or maybe I'll even think, I have to keep looking at them. I don't know why,
yeah.
but for some reason I'm just drawn to looking at that person.
Yeah.
And eventually, I think around 14, 15 was when I realized, oh, dip, I'm attracted to that person.
Yeah.
You
this
know?
Is what attraction is.
This is what attraction is, yeah. So in eighth grade, since we can just fast forward to like that part, mm-hmm. I met this guy, and he actually became one of my really good friends at the time. He was one of my best friends. Mm-hmm. And I had another best friend, and she was straight. She still is straight, I'm pretty sure. But she was in love with me, mm-hmm. and I guess it happens in middle school. Everyone's in love with each other.
Yeah.
And then I never had any feelings for that guy in particular. We were all just really close-knit, mm-hmm. all of us. And at some point in time, I dated like two people in eighth grade.
Girls.
Both girls.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I had two girlfriends, and it just never felt right, mm-hmm. at least back then. And then so I finally came to terms with the fact, oh my God, maybe I'm like gay or something.
Yeah.
So I didn't know who to turn to, and I ended up coming out to my group of friends.
Okay.
I started with that guy, and he went ahead and gave me a hug, mm-hmm. and then 2 days later, he texted me. And said something like, oh, remember what we spoke about the other day and how you're feeling these things? Mm-hmm. I think I'm the same way.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And then so it was a revelation to me. I'm like, oh, my God, wait, you're, you know, SpongeBob meme.
You're for everyone listening, the limp wrist.
The limp wrist, the SpongeBob meme. It was just super brand new to me. Everything was very like foreign. I was like, what? Oh my God.
And a crush? Like, he likes me back? And...
Oh, no. This wasn't even about feelings yet. This was about him being gay.
Okay.
Well, for disclaimer, I actually identify as bisexual. But,
oh, okay.
Yeah. 80-20.
Yeah.
But, so it was just really cool because one of my really close friends just came out to me, mm-hmm. and in my head, I'm like, oh my God, we're the same. We're
yeah.
going through the same things. I can finally talk to someone about this, because my whole life I felt like I was an outlier in the situation, in the whole world, mm-hmm. and I couldn't relate to anybody else because everyone's heterosexual.
Right.
So that was cool. We kind of tabled it at that. And then I finally told my other best friend, the female one, mm-hmm. that was in love with me. And
while still dating her, you guys had broken up.
Oh, I wasn't dating him.
No, the other girl. You're dating two girls.
Were you? Oh, those two
girls?
Oh, I had already broken up
okay.
with them. Sorry, I probably skipped that part.
No,
but yeah, those lasted like 2 weeks
okay.
each. And I was telling my best friend, the female one, that I think I'm gay.
Mm-hmm.
And she flipped out because she had just saw me date, you know, two other girls, and mm-hmm. she was still in love with me. And then now I'm saying this or the other. And apparently at the time I was supposedly flirting with some girl a grade below me, and I had no idea.
You were just being gay friendly.
I guess so. And then she flipped out and got mad because she thought I was making excuses as to why I don't want to date her at the time. So guess what she did? She outed me. Outed me to the whole eighth grade class.
Wow.
Yeah. And I had already been teased for liking Gaga and all this, you know, stereotypical feminine stuff that people deem as quote-unquote gay.
Right.
So that was a nightmare. But then dealing with that, I started hanging out with my other best friend more, because at that point, that female best friend and I kind of cut ties. Mm-hmm. And the guy best friend, who also happened to be gay, we hung out more. And eventually, I mean, it's probably just young love, quote-unquote love, but we ended up developing feelings for each other. Mm-hmm. We confessed those feelings for each other to each other. Mm-hmm. And we kind of started dating, in a sense. I mean, sure. It's, you know, eighth grade.
Yeah.
Can you really date in eighth grade? So in a lot of ways, for the most part, he was kind of my first. I mean, he was my first kiss. Mm-hmm. And obviously your first gay kiss.
Yeah.
If it, you know, other things.
Yeah. much as you want to share.
He sucked my dick.
And there you go.
And I sucked his. And guess what? I fucking liked it.
It was awesome.
Yeah, actually, I didn't really like it that much. But, you know, it was an experience, because right. It was an awakening, because I feel christened.
Yeah. this is what it feels like.
Mm-hmm. But somewhere down the line, so his parents are kind of crazy. They loved me in the beginning, mm-hmm. because I'm amazing, you know.
Who wouldn't?
Who wouldn't? I'm an Aquarius, duh. I'm just kidding. But so his parents loved me in the beginning, and then I did not realize how crazy they were. They went through his texts, and it was about to be his birthday weekend, and I was planning on spending the weekend at his place. And obviously in texts, we were like, oh, well, you know, do you want to try other things?
Yeah.
Or just whatever, blah, blah, blah. Basically planning our whole, you know, weekend sexcapade.
Yeah.
Ew, oh my God, as an eighth grader. It was really honestly just like cuddling, kissing, and
right.
Sucking each other off.
Yeah.
Typical.
Yeah.
Because I
still had... I mean, that's more than I ever got in eighth grade, so...
Yeah.
Bless you.
But I had... I had no idea about other things. It's just I knew that I liked playing with my...
Friend.
My friend.
Yeah.
You know, and my own friend. But so I had no idea about, like, the anal things that came later. But, so, long story short, his parents read their texts, banned him from seeing me, and they took him out of school for a good week.
Wow.
Because they signed him up for a counselor, like, that was meant to try to convert him.
Wow.
So he was going to that. He stopped being friends with me. At this point, my other best friend, the one that added me to everybody, and I have reconciled. She apologized to the best that a Scorpio can apologize.
Savage.
Just kidding for all you Scorpios out there. I love you guys. And he was really cool with all the popular kids, so he would hang out with them more. And then they would all say all this nasty shit about me, how much of a faggot I am, because he was never outed to them
right.
or to anybody else except for me and our close friend group.
Yeah.
So I had to sit there literally a row down them, hearing them say all this nasty shit about me and how I'm a faggot and how all I do is listen to Lady Gaga because I'm such a faggot, blah, blah, blah. They kept throwing that word around, and back then it hurt a lot. And plus, he wouldn't even look me in the eye. So I had all this like resentment for him and all of those people. But you know,
I assume part of this was the parents blamed you.
Yes. Oh, yes.
Your friend gay.
Yeah.
They say, this is Rob's fault. He did this. You can't hang out with him.
I wish I could remember what they said verbatim, because it was literally so ridiculous. They said something along the lines of, he is a bad influence. He is influencing you to stray from your ways and be a sinner or something like that. Something. But basically just, yeah, saying that it's my fault that their son is like that. And I actually tried to reach out to them via his Facebook because they still had control over all of his social media, like his Facebook and...
Helicopter parents.
Yeah.
And did they respond to the Facebook?
No. But I basically sent them this long message saying, I get that you're mad at me and you probably feel like the things we were talking about weren't appropriate for, you know, teens our age, but you have to understand that I did not make him this way. Mm-hmm. He was literally, this was before Born This Way came out, but I was literally like, he was born this way and so was I, and all I did was share my truth to him, and he did the same, and I really care about him, he's my friend, blah blah blah. They never responded. Wow. Yeah, so that was...
At what point in time, so you lose your friend, your close friend that you fool around with, and they bully you, they all call you names. Had you started reconciling with the girl that outed you at this point, or did that take more time?
Yes, so okay. We had reconciled, and so she was kind of my support during that time. And then another best friend of ours, I think it was like four of us that were close-knit, and then take the guy out, so there's just three of us. Mm-hmm. So they were still pretty much there for me. Mm-hmm. It's middle school, so eventually, even though it was still shitty, it didn't go away completely,
right.
But people kind of forgot about just calling me names and whatnot, and obviously none of them knew what happened between me and him and his parents.
Yeah.
So it kind of just fizzled out. Yeah. I focused my energy on other things, not that friendship, and I tried my best to move on with my life.
Mm-hmm.
And cheesy enough, Lady Gaga helped me through all of that, you know? And so the remainder of my eighth grade wasn't that terrible, except for the fact that I got diagnosed with cancer. Mm-hmm. Kind of nearing the end of my eighth grade year.
What cancer?
It was a rare form of follicular lymphoma.
Okay.
So right underneath, right on my neck, underneath my chin. So at that point, I kind of forgot about all that drama because I'm like, oh, wait, hold on. I am dying. Yeah.
Wow.
So
eighth grade happens. Shit show, cancer happens. At this point, your parents don't know you're gay, right? Or your mom, because your dad still doesn't know. Your mom, does she know?
Honestly, I don't know the exact timeline, but eventually, around that whole drama that was happening, I did come out to my mom. I was crying.
Sure.
I mean, obviously, naturally, who, you know, someone at a young age. I was just crying, saying all these things, mostly because I felt overwhelmed that this kind of became out of my control because now it's in the hands of someone else's parents and then they're vilifying me for being a certain type of way. So I confided in my mom and she hugged me and let me know that it's not my fault. And because despite her being religious, she is way more open-minded than the majority of people who are like very much into that, you know, side of the religion.
Sure.
Yeah.
So you came out to her, and then the cancer happens. How do you now navigate that?
Yeah, it actually, so when it was happening, it wasn't as bad because I was thinking of other things. The year before, in seventh grade, my mom had breast cancer, so I was still kind of recovering from that. She's fine. She's great. She recovered. She's a survivor. And then obviously the whole drama came along with my sexuality and that guy and friends and people being mean. And then when it came to me getting diagnosed with cancer, I actually didn't really react as much as you probably would think the person would react. I kind of just stepped back and said, oh, okay, well, what's next? And thankfully, when they first caught it, it was, I believe, stage zero or becoming stage one. So at the time, middle school, I was my crutch was my hair.
Okay.
So I really liked having my hair. My confidence came from my hair for the most part.
You still have great hair.
Thank you. Thank you. If any of you out there aren't familiar with cancer, where have you been living? But the main thing with cancer treatment is chemo, and chemo, it gets rid of your hair. It mm-hmm. makes your hair fall out. For the most part, there are cases where it doesn't. But so I was very worried that that would happen, and then I'd be looking in the mirror and going, oh shit, well, okay, now, like, I got outed.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still recovering from having breast cancer. I still don't know what the fuck I'm doing and who am I, like, mm-hmm. you know, who I am and what I'm going through, what even this, all of this means. And now I have cancer and I could potentially lose my hair. And I'm just now heading into freshman year.
Yeah. Your life is falling apart.
My life.
I have a ninth grader.
Literally. Yeah. My life was falling apart at like 15.
Yeah.
So, but it's weird because when I took a step back, the whole cancer thing, I wasn't that worried because they said it was stage zero. We have to take it out, obviously. We have to take the tumor out. But you can go without treatment as long as we monitor it. So they did. And I went on vacation over the summer and came back. And as soon as freshman year started, the tumor started growing back, lo and behold. And I had just gone through that whole phase of having my neck look like a frog's neck because it was super swollen. Mm-hmm. I was trying to hide it with like scarves and turtlenecks,
mm-hmm.
which I ended up taking a liking to anyway. But and then freshman year started and like, oh great, here we go again. Now I have to get the same surgery, have the same swelling,
mm-hmm.
look gross, and now it might have to escalate to something bigger, and it did,
mm-hmm.
because when the results came back, they said that it's growing twice as fast. And now it's twice, the mass that they took out was twice as big. So we have to do something. So then, bam, chemo happened.
Mm-hmm.
Just to fast track it, I got homeschooled for the remainder of that first semester. And then came back around February. Actually, it's funny because my last day was technically Halloween, or the week, you know, before Halloween.
Sure.
So we had a costume contest, mm-hmm. and me just not giving any fucks whatsoever at that point in time. I bought a really cheap Lady Gaga Halloween costume from Party City. It was a super revealing one that she wore at Glastonbury, if any of you are familiar with her work. And I wore that to school. I was the full-on, like, heels, fishnet, wig, everything. And
I hope you won.
I did win, good. Actually. And I got dirt clods thrown at me from, like, people there. Because they were... When they realized I was a guy dressed up as a girl, they were like, oh, queer, huh? But it's funny because at that point, I really didn't give a fuck. I was like, I could be dying, so it's fine.
You're like, I could be dying. I am my role model, Lady Gaga.
Right. Like, this is me now, you know?
Yeah.
I was like Mary Magdalene in that moment. I'm like, stone me to death, motherfuckers. I don't care. And then, so I won the costume contest. And then the next day, immediately, I started treatment.
Okay.
And so I was gone for the remainder of that year and then came back around like February. Do you want me to talk about the...
Yeah, so I can edit it very precisely.
Yeah,
so
sure.
So you can take pauses or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Was it just cured pretty easily, or is there any... Do you want to go into that in the cure?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah. well, the actual treatment was very intensive because, again, at the time, only 11 Americans had a recorded case of what I had.
Oh, my God.
And in my head, I'm thinking, okay, like, you know, I want to be special and all. I want to be one in a million and all, but not when it comes to freaking cancer.
Yeah.
You know, so, but I was 15, so I was, you know, I was young. I had a young body, whatever. So my oncologist figured that the best course of action is to do a very aggressive treatment, but it's short term, which is nice. I had a PICC line installed in my arm. It was, are you familiar with a PICC
line? What's a PICC line? And for the audience that doesn't know.
Okay, so a PICC line, well, there are two things that I know of that most chemo patients use. It's a port or a PICC line. So a port gets installed, to the best of my anatomical knowledge, it gets installed like right above your chest, kind of near where your main artery is. And if any of you are doctors, I'm sorry. And then that just goes directly into that main artery. So then the chemo can be fed through there without disrupting your veins. The PICC line is less invasive because they're not cutting a hole under your chest and shoving an implant in there. It's basically a long tube. It gets fed through your arm, and that goes all the way to the same like main artery. And it kind of hangs out, so you have to wrap it when you're taking a shower because it can't get wet because you have a hole in your arm right there. And that's how the chemo was fed through because they didn't want to ruin my veins. And now in some cases, some chemo patients just get chemo through their veins. I'm not sure what those cases are. Maybe it's like really worst case scenarios, but they didn't want to take that risk with me. And plus, even though it was going to be a short term thing, it's really, I mean, you know, chemo kills everything in its path. So I got the PICC line installed and we chose that route because I didn't want a scar on my chest. I have a tiny scar on my arm. But so that was about, I think, 2 months of treatment. So from like end of October, so like, you know, starting November and then December. But it was very intensive because from what I remember, it would be every Monday we would drive down to Rady Children's in San Diego and I'd get a chemo shot and then we'd come back home. And I think Tuesday I'd stay overnight and they'd do the full thing. And then I'd be discharged Wednesday from what I can remember. But that was my life for a good 2 months and I had to be homeschooled because I couldn't be around anybody due to my compromised immune system, you know? So that was, it actually isn't as bad or wasn't as bad as people might have imagined because they were all telling me, okay, you're going to be nauseous. You're going to feel, you know, really dizzy. You're lightheaded. You might faint a few times. You might not have an appetite. Obviously your hair is going to fall out. Good luck. You look like Caillou. But I mean, besides my hair falling out and me looking like an egg, I didn't really experience any of the other symptoms. So it was fine, you know? So I powered through that whole 2 months of treatment. And at the time, I've been coordinating with Make-A-Wish volunteers because when I first initially got diagnosed with cancer, they approached me because obviously I was 15, I was eligible.
They approach you? So they just find kids or do kids apply?
I think, well, I don't know the whole process, but I did have a social worker at the hospital that was kind of helping me, you know, with the, you know, emotional stuff. And I think she might have referred me to Make-A-Wish volunteers who did work at the hospital.
Sure. She has connections. She can get you in hooking up.
From what I, So, but what they told me is since you're not doing chemo, you're not refusing treatment, in a sense, this isn't as life-threatening as we thought it was. So you're not eligible. And then when I got the surgery the second time around and got chemo, they were like, oh, surprise, bitch. bet you thought you'd see the last of me. And I asked them, I was like, so, hello, can I get now? I am dying. I'm just kidding. You know, I mean, I'm trying to, it's, I know it's a heavy topic, but you know, I hope I don't offend anybody that listens to this because I'm not trying to obviously make light of cancer because it's terrible. But for me, it's I'm past that stage and I'm proud to say that I survived and whatnot.
And everyone handles traumatic experiences differently or copes with remembering things.
Mine's dark humor. You know, So yeah, they approached me with that and we were trying to coordinate that throughout those 2 months while I was trying to get homeschooled and getting chemo. So I didn't really have time to process what was happening because all these things were happening around me and I had to stay on top of my studies because in my head, I'm like, I'm fucking up freshman year already and freshman year is barely halfway done. So like, what do I do? And then, I guess to fast track things, in February, well, actually, they let me know right before my birthday, mm-hmm. which just passed, as I mentioned, I'm an Aquarius.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. Where's my cake? but they, I met with them, and they told me, guess what? And I was like, what? You remember how you had 5 wishes to choose from? I was like, yes. And I wrote down, I want to meet Lady Gaga 4 times, and then I want a car for my 16th birthday the 5th time. And they said, yeah, well, in February, you're going to go meet Lady Gaga.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, so they were still working out the logistics of that. Oh, hello.
Is he looking here?
No, but he's hot.
Hello.
Let's just cancel the podcast. I'm just kidding.
Go see him.
Right. Yeah. No, but yeah, so that happened. And then I came back to school mm-hmm. February wearing a wig, which looked creepy enough.
Wait,
like,
let's talk about
Lady yes.
Gaga.
Oh, okay.
So you get to meet Lady Gaga, or Make-A-Wish sends you to Lady Gaga.
Mm-hmm.
How was that?
Whew. It was life-changing, let me tell you. I didn't know what to expect
sure.
because when they briefed me, they said typically when celebrities meet Make-A-Wish kids, it's in the group setting, you know, because mm-hmm. there are a lot of Make-A-Wish kids, and I'm very proud of Make-A-Wish that, you know, it even exists
right.
for children such as myself
yeah.
back then. so I was expecting this whole group setting and then maybe 5 minutes. They told me I could only bring 2 things to get autographed. Mm. And I said, okay, cool. And then eventually they gave me the logistics of the trip. Mm-hmm. And I was being flown out to Washington, D.C. with my parents. And I got to bring one other person. So I brought one of my cousins with me.
Okay.
And we went to the show. We got escorted in by her assistant. And, you know, me being curious, I was like, so how many other kids are here to meet her? You mm-hmm. know, because I'm just trying to gauge how the experience was going to go. And she literally stopped walking and turned to me and said, you're the only one. And I was like, I was like freaking out. I was like practically gagging at
yeah.
that time. I mean, you know, I mean, hello, we just had dinner and I'm about to meet my freaking idol who saved my life.
Yeah.
And so we were waiting in her meet and greet room. Because for that show in particular, she was selling meet and greets.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, cool, we get to meet her here, blah, blah, blah. I was just conversing with my parents and my cousin. And the Make-A-Wish person from that district.
Right.
And her assistant pops in with her bodyguard, with Gaga's bodyguard, and was like, no, you get to meet her in her dressing room.
Oh.
And I was like, what? She's like, yeah, she's just getting ready. Just give her a few minutes. And then her bodyguard came back. And it's funny because with stan culture,
yeah.
I'm sure you're familiar with this, they know everybody around, like, the people that they stan.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, their bodyguards, their freaking chefs, their, I don't know, pilots.
Right.
Their team, their makeup artists,
yeah.
you know, wardrobe
the
people.
The whole entourage.
The whole entourage, yeah, and more. And I did.
Yeah.
So it was shit. Even like funny just seeing, well, and her dancers too, just seeing all of them.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, I see you guys in music videos. You're the reason I started dancing, blah, blah, blah. I'm self-taught because of you guys.
Oh
and then seeing her bodyguards, and I'm like, I see you guys in all the paparazzi photos. Oh my God. And I got to meet her mom. And I'm like, oh my God, you made her.
Yeah.
Yes, queen.
What?
Yeah, you made her. Yeah.
That's incredible.
Yeah. So, and then eventually we went into her dressing room.
Mm.
And she was standing right there. And literally the whole past year and a half where, you know, I was dealing with cancer, with my sexual orientation, losing friends, not knowing where I'm headed in life. And, you know, for a freshman, that's a lot to take in.
Yeah.
And it just all, like, went away when
wow.
I saw her. And all the jitters, too. Like, I didn't throw up on her or anything.
Yeah.
I gave her a big hug, and we were probably chatting for about 20 minutes. I got to smell her perfume first before anybody else a year before because I asked about it and she was surprised I knew about it. And she gave me some mementos to keep, like a wig from the Alejandro music video, the purple glasses she wore in the beginning of the show. And we just talked. I, you know, told her about my journey, not just with cancer, but I kind of whispered in her ear. I was like, well, you know, like I've been dealing with this and your music's really helped me kind of just be more empowered and just watching your interviews, even at a young age, not knowing some of the big words you say, but like it's very inspiring. Yeah. So, you know, I just thanked her for a lot of things and I had a letter that had more things on it. And I made her this mug with like the Born This Way logo on it. And just other things. And I ended up bringing like 5 things to get autographed. And I told her, I was like, well, I was told to only bring 2, but I figured I'd bring more. That's okay. And she was so stoked about it. She signed everything. That's actually why I have a YouTube video with her singing with her, because she was signing my vinyl at the time. And she said, oh, it says Born This Way. And then I just started singing.
You know. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, maybe I'll show you when we're done. I'll show you.
Do you want to shout it out? Or would that expose your anonymity?
I mean, it would, but like, I think it's private right now.
Okay.
So.
Yeah, we can show
it. I mean, they'll be able to find
show
it,
me at
I'm
dinner.
Sure. I'll show you at dinner. but, so it was just like this. I still can't believe it happened to this day, you know? And I've seen her live so many times since then. But that was my first concert ever, mind you. That was my first show ever, first Gaga show ever. And I got to meet her, you know? And after 20 minutes, she was late to stage. They kept trying to drag her back onto stage. And then she's like, just, you know, just give me a few more minutes.
Yeah.
Blah, blah. So it was really great. And, you know, I'm just very grateful that she even took the time to do that.
Yeah.
Because I know, obviously, she's busy. She's
right.
busy with a lot of things. And I'm just happy that her team allowed her to do that. Even though she, I mean, I'm sure she has control. But still, it's like, it's a lot to ask for, you know, a celebrity, a mega pop sensation artist, icon, legend, queen, whatever, to meet a child.
Especially while they're getting 15. Ready before a show, they're trying to get their mindset right, they're preparing.
Like, you know, warming up her voice, something, going over the routine. I mean, I'm sure she can do it in her sleep, but still, it's not only, obviously at that time, I was just really thinking about, oh my God, I got to meet Gaga, yay, like, thank you so much. But then now I'm just like, that was really great of her to do. You know, so I'm also forever grateful for that experience. And it really did bring things full circle, because at the end of a very long road, I say long when it's only like 2 months, but still, you know, a long journey of uncertainty and whatnot. And obviously it never ends.
Yeah.
But there was a light at the end of at least that particular journey where everything kind of fell into place.
Right.
I was like, okay, like I had cancer, I beat it. Yay.
Yeah.
And on top of that, I got to meet her. And on top of that, my other problems don't seem as bad as they were, because now I don't have to worry about little things like, oh, are those people going to talk shit about me behind my back? Are they going to call me a faggot behind my back? Like, I don't care anymore. You know?
Yeah. You have the power of Gaga.
I literally, she gave me the power of Gaga. So I think... I mean, obviously nowadays, it's 2020. There are a lot of other artists out there who are very much, you know, big advocates of the LGBTQA plus community. And I just think we need that.
Yeah, for sure.
You know? And what's really frustrating to me is anytime somebody talks about us, whether it's in a music video or a movie or a Twitter post or an Instagram post or anything, the mentality is always, oh, they're just pandering to the gays to get attention. And you know what? Maybe sometimes they are. But at the end of the day, any support that we get from somebody who has that big of a platform, I welcome with open arms, because you know, we live in such a pessimistic world already, where I feel like everyone just needs to relax and let people enjoy things and not think the worst of somebody.
Sure.
Yeah, sure, maybe that artist is just pandering to us just to make more coin and, you know, get that payola with the radio and whatnot. But at the end of the day, it's we're the ones getting more exposure.
Yeah.
We're the ones
reaping benefits from it. So.
Yeah, we're getting more recognition, and like what you're doing with this podcast, mm-hmm. not only are you being kind of an outlet for people who might not be in such a great place in their lives mm-hmm. right now when it comes to coming to terms with their own selves,
sure.
but also to educate people who really have never been exposed to this kind of information or culture before, and all they know about gay people is that gays love dick,
right,
or whatever, or some really bad negative stigma.
Mm-hmm. So they have some preconceived, possibly fucked up notion of what being gay is, what LGBT is.
Mm-hmm.
You nailed it on the head. It's to educate and give a platform to individuals who have experienced, you know, navigating the life of an LGBTQ plus individual in their struggles.
Yeah. But with that being said, I do know that there are people out there who use us to, it's a constant cycle. And obviously I don't agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to name any names, but
big people you're talking about.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. At the end of the day, it's very much subjective, So it's my opinion and everyone else's opinion. And, you know, we might not think the same. What?
Right? See you looking at that guy.
Eyes on me. Yeah, so that's definitely, I'm not turning a blind eye on that because, and I don't want people to think that I'm just excusing and dismissing people who use us as toys or as just, to promote their own thing, because that's definitely around.
Thank you all for tuning into episode 1 with Rob. Make sure to tune back in on Tuesday, February 18th for episode 2 with Rob. And as always, you can check us out on www.thealphabetmafia.com. And as a reminder, if you want to be featured on the blog, go ahead and email us at podcast@thealphabetmafia.com. Remember, you are not alone. For anyone out there that is struggling, that doesn't feel like anyone cares, that might feel alone, remember, you are not alone. You are the hero. You are loved. You are valid. And if you are in need of serious help, please, please, please check out thetrevorproject.org or give them a call at 1-866-488-7386. Again, remember, you are loved, and I want you to know that no matter what. Thank you all for tuning in to the show. Have a beautiful morning, evening, whatever it is. Good night.